All right. Welcome back into another episode of the Scenario Sports. I'm your host, Matt Whitener. Glad you're still rocking with us. If it's your first time, thanks for coming through. If it is your first time, I'm happy that you picked this one, because this is going to be a conversation that I want for everybody to get a piece of, because it's going to do you a lot more good than you know. Starting off with that, I gotta welcome in my guest, man, Michael Tillery. He is the he's what I call the voice of the conscious that we all need to have. And if we don't have it yet, you go get it today. So, Mike, what's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
Long time no hear from you, brother. Glad to finally talk to you, and especially on the record, since the last time we talked on the record.
So I'm glad that you brought up that long time, because before we get into anything else, I absolutely wanted to bring that up first and bring people into the light about that. So I'm going to tell you something about yourself that you probably don't know, but I feel like you should know. I feel like we should be giving people they flowers while they're here. So what is this, 2000, almost 21, wow. So many years ago when I first jumped into this game, Mike was one of the absolute first people that jumped in and saw what I was doing. Gave me some encouragement, some guidance about how to go about that and how to get out there and start doing it. But ever since that time, I've always used you, even from afar, or even whether it's bouncing an idea or something that I'm thinking about in a comment on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. Be like, how close to the mark am I on this? Let me see what Mike's response is to this, and I'll decide whether I'm going forward with this idea or not. So because I mean, what, 10 years ago, man, almost, I got into the game, and shortly after that, you know, we were doing some things together at that point, and I was definitely watching your work then. So, you know, walk people through a little bit about, man, about you. I hate giving people's intros and their credits, man. It's always better coming from the source.
Basically, you know, and I appreciate an honor, you know, from you saying that, Matt. You know what I mean? I like to call people soul models all the time. You know, people say role model. I say soul. It comes from the soul for me. You know, that's what I'm most attracted to, the soul, not the optics of a role. You know, so I definitely consider you, you know, a soul model in that sense, because you step out above and beyond the narrative and create your own. It's not like a moving with the crowd, which I thoroughly and vehemently am against. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm more of an individualist. Just think of yourself as a talented teammate who can add his talents to the collective of the team.
You know what, man? And I'm glad you put it that way, because that definitely is something that I believe in, is the collective voice, you know, but not necessarily being a voice that moves all together. You know, people come to me now that are, you know, closer to the age I was back when I was reaching out to you initially. And it's like, you know, it's just like, hey, man, make sure you always are speaking your truth, but make sure your truth is really rooted in something. You know, yes. Don't just make it be your opinion, because your opinion isn't your truth. That's your opinion. Make sure what you're saying is actually coming from a place, and make sure it's serving a bigger goal than just boosting you up and just making you feel like you're right with what you're saying. You know, mm-hmm. So I got to hit you up front. I know you always are representing Philly, always representing Philly. I always respect that. You got love for your town like I got love for St. Louis, and I always make sure that people understand that and are giving credit to the things that come through there. But, you know, a question I like to ask everybody that comes on the show, man, is out front. First, just throw your allegiances out there, man. So what have been the squads that have, you know, carried you through your time? How'd you end up with them? That's always a good spot to land at. And I know you got some interesting background to yours.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with the doozy at first. 1977. Yankee Stadium. Reggie Jackson, his 3 home runs.
Oh, man.
That was my first baseball game.
So you started at the mountaintop. You fell out the clouds and landed on the mountaintop right off out front.
Yes, wow. My dad had some business, first in Jamestown, PA, and then in New York. It was Jamestown, New York, then was Boston, and then it was New York. And usually he just left, and I said, Dad, can I come with you this time? And he took me. And one of his superiors gave him tickets to that game.
That's incredible. What's that vibe? Like, I know that's an energy that you can still feel right now.
I, you know, to be honest with you, and it kind of lends itself to why I'm allegiant to the next team that I'm about to mention in University of Michigan. The only time I have heard a louder sound then that game has been in the bowels of the big house. It was a Michigan Penn State game when LeVar Arrington looked like a just like a pinball all across the field. It's the fastest thing I've ever seen from up top in terms of the difference in athleticism between players and their peers. You know, of course, you know, I am a Philadelphia 76ers fan. You know, I kind of go in and out with the Eagles because I'm not one to listen or suffer fools. Okay. Just because I am from here, just because I adore you as a team and an organization, does not necessarily mean that I am tethered to you forever. Mm-hmm. If you insult my intelligence, you know, regarding your moves or your treatment of players, I'm out.
What's been the I mean, when you talk about the Eagles, you know, the first person that comes to mind, two people come to mind for me right away are Randall Cunningham, Donovan McNabb. Right away.
Yes.
You know,
yes, right,
both who had, let's call it interesting tenures in town with the team. Walk me through that. Cause I know that you had your thumb on the neck of that. And then I want to get back to Michigan though, because I got to talk Fab Five. I have to, I just won't let that go.
Okay. So with the Eagles, you know, my dad, as you know, he was a sports enthusiast. So he would take me to games. I can remember being 2 years old. As a matter of fact, it's crazy. My first football game was a game against the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, wow.
It was at the at Veterans Stadium. And I remember back then, remember those foghorn, plastic foghorns that they had? Okay, yeah. It's funny. My dad used to use that to fix the family television so he wouldn't get electrocuted, you know? But, yeah.
Tactics, man. Tactics. We had a handprint on the side of our TV we used to fix it with.
Wow. So, you know, becoming an Eagles fan is directly connected to him. You know, I remember he would also have his friends over the house and they would watch USC games when O.J. Simpson was there. Hmm. So I called O.J. Orange Juice, you know? As a kid, you know, so becoming an Eagles fan and then them drafting, you know, Randall Cunningham, you know, in the later rounds out of UNLV and seeing this guy with this Jerry Curl that looked like me, you know, on the field, you know, coming off the tenure of Ron Jaworski, who was very successful here, took the Eagles to a Super Bowl,
right?
You know, which they lost to Kenny King and the Raiders. But so finally, you know, being able to see a man that looked like me in a leadership position. You know, I was upset with Buddy Ryan initially because he used Randall on like 3rd and 25s, you know, long yardage. And ultimately, in most cases, he would get the first down. The Eagles at a time, again, and we're coming off of a system, like it was Wilbur Montgomery, it was Ron Jaworski, Mike Quick, and also Harold Carmichael, which were the guys on offense. Dick Vermeil crying all the time, you know.
You know about
him out there, right? So you know, it was a new thing for me. It was a brightening of athletics because at the time the Eagles were very good in terms of getting to the playoffs all the time. And also we had the Sixers were very good. I'm not an Eagle, a Phillies fan at all.
Mm.
My dad.
Was that the Yankees? Was that because of the Yanks had your attention or was it another situation
it was,
there?
It was the Yankees, of course, being their first game. I actually played on a few Yankees teams, you know, Little League. I actually coached Yankees teams and my sons played on Yankees team. So I got Yankees pinstripes in my blood, but it was more about the treatment of Dick Allen.
Okay. Here. Okay.
Okay. Dick Allen, who is, in my opinion, the closest guy to Mike Trout in terms of his all-around efficiency, you know, what he did on the field. Of course, they play different positions, but
yeah,
those are the things that Dick Allen did way back when.
Yeah. Dick Allen is one of the lost talents in the history of baseball, definitely in the last half century of it. It's funny you bring up Dick Allen. That's my father's favorite player. You know, he spent time in, obviously he spent time in Philly, spent time in St. Louis as well. Successful everywhere he went. All-star, two different positions. I mean, just had it all. So, yeah, I mean, and actually a funny story about Dick Allen. Met him once at a signing he was doing in town. I was really young. But, you know, when your father say, hey, this is my favorite player growing up, you know, I want you to go to this signing. We went to go. He was at a little card shop. Met him out there. Met his wife, really nice lady. Last year, I think, I reached out to his site and got a signed Dick Allen baseball. Gave it to my pops for that. I mean, and it's just, and it's crazy about how those individual players that everybody might not give credit to, but definitely stand out in the mind of people that were there in the moment and knew it. And I think that speaks to that lineage and that legacy of keeping that conversation going too.
It was an early education for me because I remember my dad would stand me up next to the TV and he would see maybe five or six, you know, white folks, and then there would be this lone black person at the end of this line, and they all had the same jobs. But my dad said to me, "Don't you ever assimilate?" And he would point to the black person. Okay, so when it came to Dick Allen, and it's the reason why I have a sense of urgency. I was just talking to my girl about a sense of urgency. The reason why I have that is because I get straight to the point. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be no deferring. There would be no subservience. There would be no making anyone comfortable for the moment. If the facts exist in front of our faces, that's what would be the conversation. Yeah. And it would not differ from that. And I think that has been one of our main challenges and obstacles as black people, is we have this little bit of empathy where we shouldn't have it.
Where it doesn't exist on the other side
it
either.
Doesn't it doesn't exist.
Exactly. It's empathy. It's empathy that if you look in the mirror, it's not looking back at you.
It's not looking back at you.
And that's one of the things that I know that we absolutely are similar in and share a very unique, unique. There's a lot of people to see it. There's not a lot of people that are either bold enough or take the time enough to put word to it. But we see that in sports all the time. Most of the things we talk about are challenging conceptions, challenging opinions, looking at things that are happening and saying, hey, right now, this is the time to talk about this. And that's one thing I say about controlling the narrative, you know what I mean? And making sure that it's understanding something before it becomes prevalent in the way that people are forming the larger conversation. Couple of things I wanted to wrap with you about that, and really just that really sparked my mind about it is, you know, if we look back years ago, actually, let me say it this way. I remember maybe 3 years ago, correct me on the timeline, that, you know, you were talking about, you know, with the NFL at the peak of the Kaepernick situation and what was going on with that, and saying that, you know, you're checking out on them for the way that they did it. Because for what you said was that, you know, you got to call out wrong when it's there. And there's a lot of wrong in this situation and isn't happening. But I can recall a conversation that we had about when you came back around on the league. And it was with a conversation that you had that, you know, my opinion, my position with it was when the NFL went out and when the Kaepernick situation was doing it, I was doing everyday afternoon drive radio. I had nowhere to go around it. I had to face it and deal with it and sometimes have to be the black voice for it, which I never liked being. But I thought that in that moment, I felt like I needed to be there to be able to tell that story because too many people were swinging it and swung it, unfortunately, against Cap. And I noticed you came back around on it during that time, too, for a similar kind of reason.
It's funny. My girl's here. She was with me this day. You know, Howard Bryant, a good friend of mine, ESPN writer, author, you know, he called me up and said, look, I'm going to be in Philly. Let's get up. You know, we're doing something on the 50th anniversary of the Mexico City Olympics in 1968. So obviously this is 2018. Mm-hmm. Dr. Harry Edwards was his panelist, and it was like a basically like a fireside chat at Temple University You know, after the game, you know, Dr. Edwards and I were talking, and I was telling him of, you know, my indifference to the NFL. And he looked me straight in my face and said, you have to speak out. As much as you don't like it, we have to kind of evolve our protests of the NFL so that people like you aren't kicked out of the narrative.
It's being in the NFL around that time kind of felt like being a war correspondent because there was so many things happening. And I'm a person of the opinion saying that if you didn't see it with your own eyes, you are catching it secondhand no matter what. So yes. If I'm going to be a part of the secondhand story, it can't just be told by one half of that mirror we just talked about.
Exactly. Well, Dr. Harry Edwards is someone that I have always respected, you know, and it was an honor to finally meet him. And it was such a great event, you know, and I'm talking about the Mexico City Olympics, which I am also 6 degrees of separated from because Spencer Haywood is a good friend of mine. Mm. You know, he was the youngest player in the world in those 68 Olympics, where many athletes, including Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, protested and did not play. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the year also that I was born. It was the year that Martin Luther King was assassinated. That's where all this comes from for me. Mm-hmm. You know, again, also with a father who, you know, served during a Vietnam war times and was a, you know, special forces and, you know, basically was a security arm for the late John Glenn, the astronaut.
Okay.
You know, so this all comes from something. You know, the way my dad used to teach me how to remember the birds as they flew on our windowsill every morning to be fed. I had to remember what type of bird it was and the time that it flew on the windowsill, which gave me a gift of remembering things from a very young age, and also taught me how to remember the memory before the memory. Okay, which is something that I think everybody should teach themselves to do. You have a memory, try to remember what happened before it, which gave me a sense of not losing anything from my mind in terms of how it happened, either on the athletic field, in terms of history, politics, or art.
Yeah, you know, that's a wow, that's a great call out. You're gonna have me digging for memories that I hope I haven't lost, but they're in there somewhere, though. You know,
great exercise. I mean, my girl says to me all the time, because there'll be a movie on TV, and I could tell her, you know, what year it was in, or car, you know, or a different event that happened in sports. I said, you know, it's come from that teaching of my father. You know, I'm very honored that he did so for me.
There's a lot of great things you can get in that area. I was really happy to have my father on our last program, you know, talking about Bob Gibson and some of the great athletes we saw. I mean, it makes me think back. If you talk about memories before memories, I call back to my grandfather and him being a lifeline to Satchel Paige and the people like that, you know, really tell the whole story that helped to shape the way that I look at sports now. And, you know, one thing I think that when you look at, you know, the big picture, and that's a great segue for one of the things I wanted to touch on you with. You know, it seems like an annual occurrence at this point. LeBron James wins a championship. And then I start to see like blades of grass in the ground, a lot of different levels. Grass doesn't all grow even. Some grows longer than another. Some is cut. Some is, you know, a different texture than the other, but it's all grass. And that's what the conversations are about the place for LeBron James in the game right now. And I think it got complicated a little bit this year by, obviously, Michael Jordan will always be there, but Kobe Bryant as well. And I know that Kobe Bryant was somebody that you had the pleasure of watching come up from the very beginning of his career. So to see, obviously, you know, what happened back in January was just indescribable. But to see everything that has revolved around him this year and accumulating with, you know, a Laker championship and people talking about that in the context of history around Kobe and LeBron and Mike and all those things, what has been your thoughts around, you know, just what that conversation has been for the culture in basketball this year?
I spoke to you earlier about remembering history. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with older men who talk about the Eastern League in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So that's how far back my history goes with the NBA. So everything is in that context of history, that broad sense of 50, 60 years of basketball, 70, 80 years of basketball. So the lineage that I had, and I've spoke to many luminaries and also the players in particular themselves, was Elgin Baylor, it was Connie Hawkins, Julius Erving, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. I thought that the next guy would be Andrew Wiggins, being that he was as athletically gifted as the aforementioned. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that he would be that guy to step in line. You know, when I talked to Doc about this, he added Vince Carter and also Dominique Wilkins. All right? Call it the evolution of the slasher. Mm-hmm. So it's been a position.
Where does David Thompson fit into that for you?
David Thompson only – the reason why he doesn't fit for me is because all of those players, with the exception of Connie Hawkins at 6'10", was 6'6", 6'7", 6'8".
Okay.
Okay? So it was more of a height thing, more than a shooting guard thing.
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
Which Kobe Bryant actually was. You know, I look at everybody, compare them to Will Chamberlain and also Julius Erving because I'm here. Mm-hmm. You know, I've interviewed John Chaney, you know, Sonny Hill, two great friends of Will Chamberlain, you know, who basically told me the quote that Oscar used, the record book does not lie, you know? So, you know, there's so much encapsulated in that. So when I see this baby bull come along in LeBron James and him doing the things that he did, I think it was 28-8 in his first game in the NBA, I have to appreciate what he has done and who he is. The one thing that I will say about LeBron, and I've said it to his face in different interviews, where he has actually closed down the locker room so me and my brethren could speak to him exclusively about something the mainstream did not want to talk to him about. Mm. The first interview that I did with him in a locker room was about who was the greatest athlete of all time. At the time, Terrell Pryor was Ohio State's quarterback. You know, he was basically that all-around athlete who became a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Okay? I was comparing LeBron to him and asking LeBron about him being a quarterback. And he told me that, you know, he was a third string quarterback. He would come in and throw flea flickers. He could throw the ball 60 yards in the air. But he told me that he would rather be the player making the play down the field because he was tight end in high school.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that if small forwards and power forwards become quarterbacks, the takeover would be complete.
Okay.
They would just be physically unable to be stopped. You know, so LeBron doing what he's done and also what he has done for me. Kobe Bryant has done the same thing for me, you know, with my fellow writers here. You know, Anthony Gilbert is the most prominent one who's probably my best friend in the game. You know, Anthony was the first to bring the camera inside of the NBA locker room. Now, we know now what that has become with the advent of social media, but he would bring this little $100 video camera in the locker room. And it just changed everything. Because we were able to get stuff documented that people they thought we were radical. You know, they thought that word radical, just being thrown around now. But, you know, so LeBron has been that guy for me. And then when I started to see his evolution, I was really upset with LeBron after the Giselle Bundchen cover, you know, because I thought that was something that was immense, that it was a big mistake. And I remember bringing in like 30 questions I was going to ask him. And I ran it by David Aldridge, and he was like, Mike, don't do it. He was like, Mike, don't do it. Please don't do it. You know, the way things are in hindsight, that's one of my regrets, that I did not challenge LeBron at the time. But maybe in terms of his maturation, he was not ready for that big of a conscious moment. That guy.
Which LeBron version are we looking at here? Are we looking at first Cavs run, mid run?
We're looking at the first Cavs run. I'm thinking after San Antonio.
Okay, so 08.
Yeah, around 08, around that time.
After his first baptism of his career.
Right. Yep. He's the only athlete that I have ever known that will finish my questions. You know, I can walk into a presser 5 minutes late and know that no one would ask my question. You know, LeBron knows what I'm going to say because consciously he is aware of the moment and the spirit that we need to talk about who we consciously are as Black people.
That's a great thing. And that was a conversation, I know that all great conversations, many of them take root in the barbershop and they grow up from there. And people like myself and you who are asking questions for a living, who are thinking about things like that can draw inspiration from that. So in the spirit of that, a conversation I was having in the barbershop was, we're getting towards the end of an era, if you will, in the NBA soon. You know, although he's coming off of a title and he's had, you know, the run that he's had, all things must pass at the end of the day. And LeBron's time is going to end sooner than I think people realize. What's next? I mean, you talk about the long run that we've had in the NBA with these different stars and different people driving it. And one thing that's always true is that somebody will step up and grab the torch. But I'm very curious about what you think that new era of leadership is going to look like in the post-LeBron era, because he's changed the expectations and some of the ways that we know what our superstars are going to be focused on.
How I'm going to answer that question is to give you this. Why aren't there Kobe Bryant clones? Why aren't there Larry Bird clones? We hear Michael Jordan. Why aren't there Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Wilt Chamberlain clones?
I would say because it's impossible.
Yes, it's impossible, right? But I'm saying, you would think that following Kobe's lead that many people will try to emulate. Like, I take over the baseball. I taught my kids Barry Bonds' timing mechanism at the plate. Okay? That step forward, that step back, than a crank, okay? My kids were hitting so many home runs that the parents were getting mad at me. They thought it was pretentious. They thought I was trying to do something to show up the rest of the league. I was just trying to get these kids ready for the next level.
Right.
Okay, so when to say all that, I don't know if that player exists right now who will follow what LeBron James has done both on and off the field. There seems to be a preoccupation with clout chasing.
It seems to be something that's running pole position as opposed to the real substance of it.
Right. I've watched in Cleveland and Akron, LeBron James buy so many bikes for a bunch of kids and him ride those bikes, lead those bikes back to his front doorstep. It was the greatest thing, one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It gives me chills just thinking about it. You know, you brought up Kobe Bryant's name. I'm still not ready to – I'm not resigned that he's gone.
Yeah.
Okay, it still hits my heart when his name is said because we became so close from player to reporter, you know, when he was playing in the NBA. But, you know, I don't think that player exists. I don't see Kevin Durant being that guy. I don't see Kawhi Leonard being that guy. It remains to be seen if Zion Williamson is that guy. I think LeBron James, what he did is he occupied a niche. And since he has done so well, maybe people think that there doesn't need to be another guy who fills that niche, that conscious and basketball player. When I get into arguments and debates with people who, with this Kobe, Michael Jordan, you know, Wilt Chamberlain thing, I say to them this, LeBron James became a global icon. He does not face his just peers. He's facing history whenever time he gets on the court. Now, Kobe did tell me prior to the Beijing Olympics, you know, when asking him about, you know, how would this moment augment what already is a great player? He told me that I live in the moment. I don't reflect. I don't do anything else. I live in the moment. Mm. I both appreciate that, and you know, especially in hindsight of Kobe's death, I understand what he is saying there. And maybe I don't know. I don't want to say anything, you know, out of hand, you know, but him saying so just gave me a new appreciation for him, given that, you know, he's passed. LeBron James, when I talk to him, you know, he has this fire about him, you know, that is just under the surface. You know, he's very frustrated by how and why people talk about him the way they do, given that, you know, he is a gifted father, man, and teammate. You know, it's very difficult for me to say any word offhand about LeBron James because he is the definition of a soul model.
Yeah.
And, you know, him doing what he has done, you know, and me having this, the honor of being able to talk to him at the various stages of his career, you know, I haven't spoken to him, you know, on a record in a few years. But, you know, I'm a big admirer of his because he does the family thing right, you know, and he's putting his sons in position to be, and also his daughter, to be highly successful, given that he's an excellent father and wife, I mean, and husband. And to be able to see what Bronny eventually is going to do, and maybe he becomes his father. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's a perch under his father. We'll, that remains to be seen. But I'm very interested to see in that next guy. I see, like I brought up Kawhi and Kevin Durant, and it's not that I see them as lesser people, but I don't see them to have the full throttle that LeBron James has. That's even including Steph Curry. You know, they're all very gifted basketball players, you know, but you can pigeonhole them into that box. Mm-hmm. It's something you can't do with LeBron. You know, his business dealings are broad or immense.
He's a great example of a perfect storm working, you know, I mean, and it's all work. It all emanates from him, you know, of having a lot of people look at you, but still being able to make moves behind yourself while the camera is on you. One guy that really fascinates me right now, and it actually came from a program I watched that he was on where he went back home, and I learned a lot about kind of what drives him. Is Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, I think that it was me and you that were kind of having an exchange about that. When after he won the MVP, a lot of people were going to be, nobody's going to be completely happy with how MVP worked out this year, which is a good thing. That's parody. I enjoy parody. But, you know, people looking at him now saying, all right, Milwaukee's lost 2 years in a row. This is your MVP. You know, I say right away, I'd say, boy, I'd rather have expectations than to have nobody care. You know, Giannis is at this point right now where let's just look at two guys in the league next to each other. Giannis is an MVP two times over. James Harden was MVP. Nobody gets mad at James Harden when his season flares out. But people are starting to get upset at Giannis for it because I think those expectations are there. And I think that there's not going to be one guy that takes the league over when LeBron leaves because there wasn't one guy that took the league over when Jordan left. You know, when Magic and Bird moved out, you know, when Dr. J was going by, it was two people in Magic and Bird. You know, you had Kareem, who was a constant throughout all of that. You know, there's a lot of things going on. I think we're at a perch that I don't think we've ever been at. Tim Duncan was that constant. you know, while LeBron was rising to his era and Kobe was at the peak and you had your Allen Iversons and your Shaqs and all of that. But there's not one guy. But if I was going to put my chips on a guy that after I learned about his background and what his motivation is and what moves him in life, Giannis is a different type of dude. And I think that that's going to become more prevalent as more of the light has to get shined on him.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, it speaks to the evolution, you know? It speaks to the maturation of individuals. It speaks to the difference in humanity. And, you know, given that Giannis via Africa to Greece has the worldview that he has.
Yeah.
You know, he was very instrumental in having the Milwaukee Bucks do something that will be mentioned for hundreds of years from now and stopping, you know, playing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay. I expect him in the same way that I was alluding to earlier about LeBron James and that Vogue cover. You know, maybe he wasn't ready then. I see the same thing and Giannis, but I see a heightened sense of consciousness. And in that consciousness, obviously, is a world overview of what a human should be, let alone a black man.
Right.
You know, given that he was also in Milwaukee, you know, with what went down with his teammates in Milwaukee and, you know, the state of affairs in that town. Which, mm-hmm. if you've never been in Milwaukee, you have no idea what goes on there.
I'm glad you said that. I'm really glad you said that because, you know, people, I think it's second nature to hot stove with people's careers and to say, you know, hey, Giannis is looking at Dallas or Miami or Golden State or whatever it is. And maybe he is. But I'm going to go on the record and say him staying in Milwaukee, which is a city that gets overlooked for its scope on, you know, black affairs in that city and what it really means because it's in Wisconsin and people don't look at Wisconsin that way. Him making the impact he can make by being a long-term fixture in that city and staying in a place that has seen Kareem leave and has had the other than that, the only image of sports for them really is the Green Bay Packers, which is about as far away from cultural relevancy in our sphere as you can possibly be. That would make a massive, massive shift in how people view, you know, affairs that aren't just in the major cities and in the major places of being locked in.
I need to have a conversation with someone who was relevant, you know, given that he starred so far in Milwaukee. That's Marcus Johnson. Marcus Johnson has been on my show, him and his son, Chris. You know, shout out to both of them. I think that Marcus – in particular, because he's so close to the team, you know, TV and radio for them, that he will be kind of a strong force in making sure that Giannis stays here by giving him a sense of consistency. You know, those Milwaukee Bucks teams, you know, were so great. It's unimaginable sometimes when I think about how the Sixers got through them with just Doc. You know, mm-hmm. Cheeks came along a little bit later on. Cheeks and Andrew Toney, and obviously Moses. But you know, I love Marcus Johnson. He's my second favorite player of all time. I told him that if I was born in Milwaukee, he would be my first. You know, Giannis needs to stay there. You know, he's so talented. Chris Middleton is a definite second. And Chris Middleton can be seen as a first if you really look at his talents. The mistake that Milwaukee Brass made was getting rid of Malcolm Brogdon. You know, that was a big thorn for them, you know, and they haven't recovered. You know, they do have some gifted players, but they aren't ready to me to be that clutch guy like a Murray from Denver is. You know, how he's catapulted himself to be a fixture in this league for the next 15 years.
Absolutely. You know? The Bucks are in an interesting position. You know, I think that I still feel like things on that side of the world still run through them because of him. And, you know, let's not encapsulate the entirety of a player, good or bad, in what happens in one series, because that doesn't tell the story about what he did. I mean, I believe that he joined Cap as the only players to 25, 15, and 5, I think. That's a hell of a season. I don't care how it ended. That's a hell of a season. And when the only comparison you've got when you're 24 years old is a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar season, yeah, that's a let's say that's a good start. Speaking of good starts, man, let's talk about something that I know is of importance to us. The situation with black quarterbacks in the NFL right now. My favorite stat of this year has been is that we had 10 starting black quarterbacks on the first week of the NFL season. We were one injury away from having an entirely black quarterback slate in week two in the late games going through Sunday night into Monday. It's a type of progression that I think that even, you know, in my mind was unforeseeable 3 years ago even. And to do that and to know that Jameis Winston and Jacoby Brissett are being oppressed in backup roles at the moment behind guys that if you just look on the talent level and you don't look at the name and the resume and Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees, they should absolutely be playing ahead of in my mind. But we had a conversation the other day about, you know, the guy that's going to be coming up next in that debate and who's going to be joining that fraternity next year. And that's in Justin Fields at Ohio State University. And I know what it takes for you to have to give that type of credit to a Buckeye. But he's embroiled in, you know, the most recent in the long line of college quarterback who's the man debates. And you've got this time it being Fields and being Trevor Lawrence of Clemson. And, you know, as we move through a very unpredictable NFL season and what that looks like, one thing that is guaranteed is that whenever that season is over and whenever college football comes to a close, it's going to be those two guys are going to be pitted against each other for supremacy at the top of the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. But early on, the odds on favorite has been in discussion is Trevor Lawrence. So in the spirit of jumping ahead of the narrative, you know, what's really going on there? What are you seeing happening here that maybe we've seen in the past and that we need to avoid in making these decisions, at least how we frame it going ahead?
Matt, you and I have been the black ink and white rooms for a long time. Okay. So we are comfortable knowing that we're the singular voice, if we choose it to be a singular voice, and the constants of the mainstream. It's something that, you know, one of my first taglines when I got into this game was change the narrative. Mm-hmm. You hear that phrase everywhere now. You know, it's time stamped in my work as early as 2003. You know, you hear it everywhere. One of my pieces has been the black quarterback, change the narrative. This is something that I have been close to ever since Randall Cunningham was here. He would win so many awards and was a constant winner of awards, the Maxwell Awards. But yet, the NFL would give it to like Boomer Esiason or John Elway or the like. Randall Cunningham's 1990 season, I think he threw for 3,800 yards and had 920 yards rushing, whereabouts, somewhere around there.
Which was astonishing to consider what year we're talking about when we're seeing that now, and that's winning MVP awards, and it's winning, you know, we'll walk down the ladder and get to Lamar, I'm sure. But for that season to be buried where it is, it's still a crime. It's still a crime that more people don't talk about that year right now. Randall, the game wasn't even shaped that way for people to have that kind of season then. It wasn't played that way. It was Randall. It wasn't a scheme or anything. It was all him being him.
It was all him being him. And the deficiencies of that team were mired in, Buddy Ryan's apprehensiveness or reluctant to hire an offensive coordinator. You know, that team should have won a Super Bowl. They had a number one defense across the board, one of the greatest defenses of all time, and a 46 defense. And it's a shame that they didn't win a Super Bowl. Now, Randall did have two unfortunate injuries heading into the season where they were both 4-0, and tore his knee up twice, you know. So that's a part of it too as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at that season, and like I said, you juxtapose it to what Lamar Jackson did last year. You know, obviously Lamar was a little bit more efficient because it was a different league then. There were more interceptions thrown than now, and there was a lot more specialists, you know, on offense, and, you know, fullbacks, and, you know, we had very few fast, strong safeties. You know,
just, tight ends were six linemen. You know, it was a different world.
Right. Different world. And he had one of the first tight ends that was a true pass catcher in Keith Jackson. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you know, if you know nothing but the hierarchy or the meritocracy in the NFL regarding quarterbacks, you're going to say Elway, Montana, and Marino.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Very few say Warren Moon. Warren Moon had to endure so much. We all know his story.
Yeah.
You know, I am one to make sure that I say his name. What would have happened if he would have been drafted by the NFL? You know, no record would be safe.
You mean after he won the Rose Bowl?
After he won a Rose Bowl, being the first black quarterback to do it against my beloved Michigan.
So let me ask you this while we're right there and we talk about what would have been. If we look back, you know, let's look through the 80s. Let's look even into the early 90s. In your opinion, who would be the three quarterbacks who, just simply off the color of their skin, and we can include Warren being a part of that, didn't get a chance to etch their legacies that should have, based off of what we saw in college? And if all things were equal, those opportunities would have been there.
Well, the guys that stick out to me was Willie Totten, who was Jerry Rice's quarterback,
mm-hmm.
who threw for crazy yards. It was amazing what that team did. The next guy to me would be Tommy Frazier. And it wasn't that he wasn't drafted. People like to say that. He had blood clots.
Yeah.
Okay? People need to change the way they talk about Tommy Frazier. It wasn't like he wasn't given an opportunity. He had blood clots. And I think that he would have forced the league, based on his strength of character and also his athleticism, to change the way they saw the quarterbacking position.
Mm-hmm. We probably had to wait on until Michael Vick. It was that much of a straight line.
Right. You remember, we all remember Tommy Frazier's last game versus Florida, right?
Oh.
You know? You know, the other guy – the other guy for me would be Quincy Carter, man.
Okay.
You know, it would be Quincy Carter. Before, you know, Tony Romo finally took them to a playoff game, you know, it hadn't happened since 1996 with Quincy Carter.
Right.
You know? And, you know, he's much maligned the way he's spoken about, even by his former owner, you know, and Jerry Jones. But some guys just have it. The words on paper do not really accumulate and define who they are. The moment does. Like, you can have a guy who's four passes and 20 incompletions that will win the game on the last second. You know, Quincy Carter was one of those guys for me. You know, Hines Ward should have been a quarterback. Randall L. should have been a quarterback. You know, Jeff Blake should have gotten a lot more shine. Aaron Brooks. You know, Aaron Brooks spoke out of turn and was blackballed. You know, Jeff Blake also played for that Saints team. You know, there were a lot of guys, man. Vince Evans.
I'm gonna throw another one in there as of recent, who never even got to take the ball under center, except for in those, you know, those little sets and stuff that were popular for guys like Pat White and things around that time, which was Brad Smith, who was from my alma mater. You know, you look at Brad Smith, and if you look at what Brad Smith and Woody Dantzler were doing on Saturdays around that time, nobody else in the country was doing that. Now, Brad went on to have a great special teams career, but I watched that guy play every game in his college career, and I said, there's no way this is not an NFL quarterback. even if the arm wasn't there, even if it wasn't going to be a thing where he was going to be an all pro. And that's a piece of the narrative that I want to shift to. Sometimes people need to get the opportunity to prove they're not something. And that's where it's at. Yeah. You just go there. And you know what? If you can't throw the ball, if you're not great at progressions, that's fine. You're good enough to play another position. You know, let's look at Braxton Miller. Braxton Miller moved right away from Ohio State, moved right away to wide receiver. You know, Terrell Pryor, we talked about him earlier. His transition was amazing. What he became, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver in the NFL after never even playing the position hardly in college. Those things are there, but it goes back to a conversation I was having about baseball and about young black players never getting a chance to pitch because we want to use their tools in other places. And no, that can't be the case. We have to continue to fight for those opportunities. And that's the thing with Justin Fields. Justin Fields is going to be a quarterback in the NFL. However, it shouldn't already be decided that he's not every bit as talented as Trevor Lawrence when you look at the numbers that he had last year and you realize that he's still a year behind where Lawrence is at as far as a starter. There could be massive gains that happen for Fields that I do anticipate us seeing now because there's going to be a Big Ten season soon, a week or two, I believe. You know, but yeah. why not allow this to be a true race as opposed to one that's already decided by this electoral college, if you will, of opinion.
It's unfortunate, man. It really is. Like I spoke to you about being the black ink in a white room. You know, it just goes back to Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, you know, so many, even the conversation around Andrew Luck and Cam Newton and RG3, mm-hmm. saying that if he'd have came out, you know, Cam Newton's year, he would have been the number one pick. And he was the greatest prospect of all time. Cam Newton is the prototype physically for an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, Cam Newton is a cheat code. I still say this to this day. It's an argument that people have. Some people attribute it to my age. I just attribute it to what my eyes saw. I have never seen a more dominant college quarterback than Cam Newton. He could have scored every time up and down the field. And instead, we give that props to Tim Tebow. I'm not going to go down that pathway. We'll be here for another hour. But what Vince Young did the year that he didn't win the Heisman, and all due respect to Reggie Bush, he balled out. But I think Vince Young got the last win in that for sure. Cam Newton improved on that model. And it was I didn't think it was possible. And then on a lesser and a different way, not lesser, that's the wrong word, a different way, Lamar Jackson just showed the unbridled potential of what that could have been, especially when you look at that season where Michael Vick should have won the Heisman following that same model. I don't know. There's a lot of – I'm very excited about the growth that we've got. I'm very excited that without a doubt, four of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL right now are brothers. I just will never be able to get over how long it took to get there. And how it still is a bit of an overcome where we're still watching the NFL draft like we're watching the election polls, just making sure that people get the props that they deserve.
So Tommy Frazier basically was a Frank Gore type of runner.
Mm-hmm.
All right? If Tommy Frazier would have played in NFL, he would have put the premium on rushing yards because that's what – he was doing in college, obviously, mm-hmm. under Osborne. You know, he had underrated arm. Osborne didn't need for him to throw the ball, given that wishbone that they ran.
Right? Yeah, there was no answer. There was no answer.
Okay. The narrative needs to shift this way. When you speak about quarterbacking in this league here, what needs to be implemented into the passer rating is rushing yards. Okay? Okay. I call it bonus ball. When a conventional statue quarterback, 3rd and 10, moves around in a pocket, can't find anybody, instead of taking that cover sack, what does he do? He throws the ball out of bounds. These brothers now, Allen does it well. Justin Herbert seems like to be one of those guys, too. I don't know if Burrows will be, or I don't know. But they get that first down.
Yeah.
Okay. That first down adds a possession to the game, hence bonus ball. You can be, again, 4-20, fourth, you know, and win the game based on scoring a touchdown on one of those bonus possessions.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
It changes the outcome of the game.
I mean, well, Pat Mahomes has almost cornered the market on that already, and he's in year three, four. Year four. I mean, year three on the field, four playing. I mean, you just look at what he does. He's not a scrambler, and I'm happy he's not. I'm happy that he's back there making the plays that he does, extending plays, doing all those things, because that's another element of the image of the black quarterback that has to change, is that it's all about footwork and it's not about drilling downfield. I think that that's still the same problem that I have with why there aren't more black pitchers and catchers, because they're decision-making positions and they're not athletic positions, when in real reality, it is. More steroid users were pitchers than hitters because of the athleticism and the wear and tear it takes to be on that mound. There are people that are talented enough to make those decisions, and that's why I'm really excited about what Mahomes does, other than the fact it's just unlike anything I've ever seen, the things he can do, and also what Russell Wilson is doing. And I think Russell Wilson is kind of that evolution of that guy that was outside of that mold, who got to the league and showed what's possible. And I want to make sure that the part that he's played in that evolution gets mentioned as well and is remembered down the road too. Because I could very easily see Russ getting lost in the shuffle between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and then what Lamar Jackson and Pat Mahomes do, even though he's played a quintessential, almost a Tim Duncan-like constancy in between those eras.
It's the same thing that happened to Donovan McNabb with Peyton and Brady. Okay, those five NFC championships in 8 years, championship games in 8 years, you know, the better playoff record than Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. You know, it all comes down to me. They see the rushing ability as a pejorative. Maybe it's because they think it's something that they can do. You know, I think that Aaron Rodgers, actually, when he came into the league, was a prototype for how to use a mobile quarterback, because his coach in high school was a black coach who taught him how to use his running ability. Obviously, when he went to California, and, you know, he was under that quarterback guru there, you know, he became more of a well-rounded player. And as he got into the league, you know, he uses his running ability when he had to, kind of the way that Mahomes does now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you were to juxtapose Aaron Rodgers' early years to Pat Mahomes in this now league,
right, obviously
there's going to be a difference in production on the ground. But you know, if you look at it, man, like Lamar Jackson rushed for 1,000 yards last year. That's 100 first downs.
Yep.
Okay, that's 100 first downs, which leads to victory. I was a little bit upset last year that they were putting Russell over Lamar. Okay, it seems suspect to me, given that Lamar went up to Seattle and beat them. Okay, his rushing yards were far superior. But you had these pundits that would actually say that it was Russell's MVP until that New England game when Lamar made it, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
The issue I have with Mahomes and Wilson is this. They become the safe bet for the pundits who don't want to see a Lamar or Kyler Murray do things.
Well, you know, we've seen – the good thing about this is that, as I always believe, history can always set you up for the future if you know what part of it to look at. And what's happening with Lamar Jackson, in a different way, reminds me a lot of when the league and when the writers and when everybody just had to embrace Allen Iverson. And you were there for that. Allen didn't fit into the mold of the Michael Jordan that came before him or any of those things, but Allen Iverson had as big of a cultural emphasis on changing the perception of who NBA players could feel comfortable with them being and what we would accept our superstars being as arguably anybody in NBA history. And Lamar is doing that right now by continuing to be himself, by continuing to be the player that he is, by not stifling his talents. And people are coming around, albeit, funny enough, slower than they did for Pat and for Russell. And we know why, and we know what it is, but more credit to him for being able to carry that burden and just go about his work and let his work speak for him. And we've seen it. And now, a year later, we're still in the same place with those same guys, but there's enough shine for all of them. And hopefully there's enough shine for Deshaun Watson in the midst of all that too, for it all to go around.
Well, again, man, so I'm glad you brought up Deshaun because, I mean, this guy threw for 900 yards and what, 8 or 9 touchdowns versus Alabama in consecutive years.
Yeah.
You know, and after that, he should have been the consensus number one pick. It speaks to what we're talking about right now.
And instead, he went 22 spots after Mitch Trubisky? 20 spots after Mitch Trubisky?
A guy who played 14 games at Carolina.
Yeah.
You know? Just think about that for a second. If these guys, and maybe you can't even say that because Russell Wilson threw for 4,000 yards at Wisconsin after throwing for 4,000 the previous year at NC State. And he still went late.
Yeah.
You know, they try to talk about his size. It had nothing to do with that. Man, I'm a Big Ten guy. You know, Russell Wilson was a beast. To throw for 4,000 yards at a traditionally running school like Wisconsin? Well,
my argument for that was right away, how much taller is Drew Brees than Russell Wilson?
I haven't stood next to Drew Brees, but I look down on Russell.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm 6'1".
Exactly. Same here. And I know for a fact that I'm taller than Drew Brees.
Yeah.
So I'll just put it that way. We know it's there. We know it's possible. It's just going to take us time to get there. But, you know, again, to bring it back full circle, you got to call it out when you see it. And part of moving the needle is calling it out when you see it. So, you know, when the tape and the measurements come out for Justin Fields, and when those conversations and things start happening because he's not the 6'5" that Trevor Lawrence is and the things like that. And I'll say this right now. This is no slight for me against Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is brilliant. And I think that Trevor Lawrence is going to be a guy who's going to turn around one of those teams that he's with. And it's going to be quite a task turning around one of these sorry teams at the top of the league. But I'll say this before we get ready to wrap up here. I got a couple things I want to hit you with. Arthur Blake's comments about not committing to Matt Ryan long-term sure make me hope that Justin Fields is in line with there, because I would love to see another crack for a great black quarterback in the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, that would be apropos, you know, in every sense of the word. You know, I want that to happen, but I also want to see someone go to a New York or a San Francisco or a San Diego. You know,
well, the option's sure going to be there for New York. One way or
another. That's going to be there for New York.
It might be one or not the other right there, the way things going up there.
I thought that Bill Belichick blew it when he didn't draft Lamar Jackson.
I'm sure maybe, Bill agrees with you.
Maybe he sees he saw down the line that Cam Newton was going to be available because of the narrative of Cam Newton and the reason why he was plucked for so much for so less dough. As we see now, we're seeing what Cam Newton was exclusive of a media narrative of him. That's the reason why I speak so much on this, man. It's easy to see that Cam Newton was going to do what he's doing now in New England.
Oh, it was the perfect place for him from the beginning. This is the guy. This is the type. Bill Belichick is definitely in the twilight of his career, but the game is just getting to a point where it's going to allow for a coach with that mentality to truly, truly thrive. Because Bill Belichick is a guy that's going to use the most talented guy he's got. And the most talented guys that are out there are Cam Newton, would have been Lamar Jackson. I'm happy Lamar didn't go there because I wouldn't have got last season just because of the complications of a Tom Brady being on hand. Mm-hmm. But this is the perfect place for Cam. And I made a comment about this a couple of weeks ago saying that when we talk about MVP, the V in that word has to stop being the least important part of it. When you talk about value, and you saw what that Patriots team was when Cam was out and Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham was in there and things like that, it just shows it. There might not be a more irreplaceable player in the situation that he's in and the talent around him in the NFL this year than Cam Newton in New England, because that team is a top five talented team without him, top five in the draft, I should say, not overall talent, top five in the draft caliber team without him on the field.
Yes. Yes.
And look at Carolina. Look at what happened with them without him. Look at where they were at. You know, look, it's just, it's not something that's happening randomly. There's a reason. And that's because Cam Newton is who he is. All right, man. Hey, before we get out of here, man, I got three things that I want to start doing with people. I'd love for you to be the first one. It's just three things, a word association. I'm just going to throw out a couple of three things to you. I just want to get your thoughts on it. I might be winding you up with this first one, but I'm going to do it. Doc Rivers.
Champion.
That, with the Sixers, with Doc coming in, and I like to build on this word association. So Sixers are certainly at an interesting place right now with the two building blocks they've got, making it work and bringing Doc in. What's that look like?
I thought that the Sixers' problems were the fact that Brett Brown was so close to Ben Simmons' dad. Okay, he really didn't have the power to hold Ben accountable. I'll talk to you off the record about Ben Simmons leaving the bubble, you know. But now that a champion is here, we'll see, obviously, with the misgivings and the failures, if you want to call them failures, of the Sixers the previous 2 years, that a maturation has to happen. And I think that bringing a Doc Rivers and pairing him with Elton Brand, you know, is going to give the Sixers a more intelligent and structured, standard than they've had. You know, I love Brett Brown. You know, I admired him for me speaking to him many times and him standing up for his players when they were going through those ugly seasons, when they wasn't even winning 10 games, mm-hmm. You know. I blame the Sixers brass for not really giving him the guy, you know, like Jason Tatum should have been a Sixer.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's so many things that they didn't do that they should have done. Now I hope that this enigma that has been the Sixers since 1983 becomes a consistent bearer of intelligence and championship.
Okay. Next up, and this is a little bit of breaking news. I'm going to put it out there just because. Tyronn Lue.
Tyronn Lue, where did he go? I saw it come up on my phone just now, man.
He took the Clippers job.
Teammates. I still see Ty Lue as a guy that Iverson stepped over. You know, I'm sorry.
He was a carcass at that particular moment.
Right. I can't see him more. You know, him being in the reason why I didn't want Ty Lue here is because I know that LeBron had the most power on that Cavs team. You know, and it's not a diss to Ty Lue. I need to see him prove it elsewhere. Now, obviously, he has a very talented roster. And I'm sure that the Clippers, because their owner is so in love with his team, he's not just a business owner. He wants to make sure that team wins. Yeah. This is why he was so mad after they underachieved. You know, but if he's able to do something that hasn't been done in L.A., you know, since San Diego Clippers, right? You know? Yeah.
Shout out to Bob McAdoo.
So more power to him. I still think, and I've said this, wherever LeBron James go is where the championship will be decided.
Yeah.
You know, if he would have been healthy last year, people say that he would not have been in the finals. I don't see why he wouldn't have been, you know? So it's really up to Kawhi and Paul George to step their games up globally. So they just aren't comparing themselves to the NBA, but are comparing themselves to history like LeBron James has done.
True talk, true talk. All right, last one, Joe Morgan.
Right? Listen, man.
When you talk about batting timing, that's a technique.
Exactly. That was a technique. And it's something that I tried to emulate as a kid. You know, especially when I tried to switch hit. You know? I never got it down. So my batting stance was more of a Steve Garvey type.
Land it back.
Yeah.
Land it back.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But listen, I had the honor of interviewing Mr. Morgan for the RBI program. You know, I'm always been very interested because baseball is my first love.
Yeah.
It's also something that I rebel against because I don't feel like baseball deserves my type of writing about the grass of the field from the press box. Mm. Okay. So that's why the reason why you don't see me covering as many MLB games as I should, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, Joe Morgan was a beast. I mean, he just was amazing. And I had to talk to him because one of the things that I told him in an interview is I think that the reason why there are so many lesser black men in the game because they took out stolen base. It's becoming, you know, soap and softball, basically. Home run and a strikeout, you know. You know, he talked to me a lot about that. You know, obviously brought up the gifted names, the Mario Wills, the Vince Colemans, the Lou Brocks, you know, the Ricky Hendersons and those names. Can you imagine if someone in the league now was stealing for 100 bases, how the game would change?
They'd be 80% ahead of the guy in second place. I think right. I think that even in a 60 game season this year, the NL leader was 14 stolen bases, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, imagine if Mookie Betts played 30 years ago. Mm. It would be something else.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why you're not seeing as many blacks in baseball. There isn't a prioritizing of that small ball stolen base.
I think that's fair. Well, man, before we get out of here, man, let folks know where they can catch up with you at, man, where they can catch your work at, catch what you got to say.
You know, I am in the middle of a book. I'll just say that it was a slave rebellion leader reincarnated. That's all I'll say for now. But that's my main focus right now. You know, you can find me on Twitter at Michael Tillery, AEL, not EAL. Okay. And you can find me on IG at Hardcore Peace, because that's what I do. I'm hardcore for peace. And obviously on Facebook at Michael Tillery, you know, but be prepared for an intelligent debate if you engage me.
Every time, man. That's why I appreciate you. Listen, brother, man, I you know, the show's getting newer in the getting off the ground here, man, but know that the door is always open for you, and I'm going to be showing you to it as often as I possibly can. So I appreciate you making time to be here. I appreciate the impact you had on helping me get off the ground and things I've done, and I look forward to us addressing the things that are going to need to be talked about going forward well into the future, man. Thanks for making time today.
Yeah, Matt, no doubt, man. I appreciate you too, Matt. Keep doing what you're doing, especially from that baseball angle. We need black men to do what you're doing. I thought it was a great show when you were talking about the black pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, and the guests that you had on the show to really get into the nuances of what it takes to be a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Not just a black pitcher, but a pitcher. Your guests were very influential in doing that. So props to you, man. You know, congratulations on your new show. And I'm very appreciative of you as well, man. Whatever you need me, I'm here, your brother.
Always, man. Talk to you soon, bro. I appreciate you.
All right.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back in for the second half, well, just the in half of the Scenario Sports. A little segment we're going to do on occasion, and I had to bring in the perfect person to feed it in. We got my man, my co-host of the Scenario, Dale Friesen here.
Well, hey man, we got like 20 emails too. We're going to have to do a scenario at some point because one dude told us his whole life story. Our homeboy that went to Texas. Oh. He gave us a whole thing of like his follows of being in Texas during coronavirus.
What? Oh, Jesus Christ.
And keep in mind, listeners, he moved from South Dakota down there because he worked in the oil industry.
Mid-pandemic. Well, yeah, the scenario is coming soon, man. I wanted people to feel like that was the breakup album, like,
right.
They got solo albums coming out. What the hell is going on? No, man, the scenario's been coming soon.
Oh, man, we gave y'all 2 years of straight stuff for 2 years.
Yeah, it's like you know how some podcasts do seasons. Like, we didn't even take a break. We did like 100 something straight weeks. We good.
Now it's time. Now it's that extra year for The Wire. The last year of The Wire, what was a gap year for The Wire?
Well, not saying that like scenario's over.
But they took a year off for a minute.
Yeah, we building. It's building season right now, baby. But in the meantime, while we're here on Scenario Sports, we got a segment here that we're gonna bring in called Sports Ratchetry. So in the spirit of the scenario and everything that we got going on, the sports world certainly is not exempt from our style. So Dale's got the stories. He'll throw them out. We're going to chop them up. Let's get into it. First episode of Sports Ratchetry.
The game within the game. I know you named the last episode that, but this is another game within the game.
All right.
Kyle Kuzma and Tyler Hero got ladies in the bubble that they've both been dealing with. I mean, well, one, both two of them have been dealing with and just broke up with. And the other one met the girl on Insta. Okay, so let me just break it down to you. Kyle Kuzma's ex-girlfriend, he broke up with her right before the bubble. Tyler Hero slides in her DMs during the bubble. Then during when the significant others can come down, she's now in the bubble cheering for Tyler Hero against her ex-boyfriend, Kyle Kuzma, all in the same hotel.
Hold on. Let me sip this tea real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ooh, that's messy. Ooh, wait.
That's what remember when we first started, but we predicted this.
Oh, yeah.
Was a possibility.
We predicted the bubble exactly how it would go. I mean,
now, like, I'm surprised that everybody is white in this situation. Kyle Kuzma excluded, he's biracial. But both with all the women, Kyle Kuzma's girlfriend is in the bubble as well. She's actually black, who I thought would be a black girl. I would have thought Tyler Hero would have been with a black girl.
I guarantee you Tyler Hero is going to spend more of his time with black women than...
But the woman that you're talking about is a white woman.
Well, yeah, I know, but that's just for right now. But, all right, so...
But Kyle Kuzma being with a black woman, tell me you weren't shocked about that.
I mean, he's from, like, Flint. I'm not surprised by that at all.
Kyle Kuzma not from Flint?
Yeah, he is.
He's from the Bay Area.
No, he not. He went to Michigan State.
Kyle Kuzma went to Washington State or like...
No, you're right.
Come on, Kyle Kuzma. He was also with one of the Kardashians before this.
Well, I mean, he fits the mold.
With a black woman, like a black woman that has, I think, believe she has, what did Michael Jackson have? She's like that model.
Vitiligo?
She's that model of Vitiligo that was on the last season of Top Model.
Oh, Lord. Well, Kyle Kuzma went to the University of Utah.
I knew it was something, see?
Oregon but he's State. From Flint. He was born in Flint.
He didn't go to no Flint High School, though, I don't think, did he?
I don't know, ain't but no I'm looking at it. Okay, I'm looking at it right here. He was born in Flint.
It makes even worse that he went from
Flint. Yeah, man, he went to Bentley High School in Burton, Michigan.
Right, and he went to Utah. So what do you think he was about then?
Man, listen, Burton is a city in Genovese County in the state of Michigan, which is a suburb of Flint.
Suburb of Flint. It ain't Flint.
I mean, Wellston is a suburb of St. Louis.
That's a very good point. But I'm saying he went to the University of Utah.
I mean, he wasn't good enough to go play for Izzo. That's all.
He could have went to Northwestern. It was a whole bunch of Big Ten schools around there.
He act like they just walking brothers in the door at Northwestern. You gotta be
Northwestern's a bad one. That's a bad one. Okay,
He could have went to Mizzou.
there you go. Illinois, University of Illinois.
At any rate, they'll take you. At any rate. Yeah, this is what we expected, though, right? Like, this is what we expected. We knew that this is going to be the case. And if there's any two cats I feel like that look like they would date the same chick, it's Tyler Hero and Kyle Kuzma. Like, just think about it. Like, because
I can see Tyler Hero being with Megan Thee Stallion.
That don't rule it out yet. Things are just getting started for both.
I mean, I was joking. That could be actually something
that might actually happen. Put that in the crystal ball of things that can happen. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, clearly, you know, she's a big city popper. So she went from L.A. to Miami. Tyler Hero probably gonna have the most reckless offseason of anybody on the Heat too.
Ooh, this is a hot take prediction.
Coming out of the bubble, Tyler Hero is going. The three people that's gonna come out of the bubble going harder than anybody else are going to be J.R. Smith, the Godfather, of course. J.R. Smith, who, by the way, took his shirt off and grabbed the trophy first after playing, I think, 43 seconds in the finals. That J.R. Smith.
Oh, is J.R. still married to the woman that he had the drama with Candace Patton? Or don't is he officially with Candace Patton now?
I don't know. Candace Patton is your department.
I haven't seen she actually weathered that storm like you're supposed to.
She did. She put her head down and just ran through the hole and got the first
and
down.
And turned off her comments.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. If all else, turn your comments off. But so Tyler Hero, J.R. Smith, Tyler Hero, and Jamal Murray have come out of the dome and probably gone the hardest since they've hit the streets again.
Well, Jamal Murray got popped with a little Instagram story.
That's how you know he's going hard. That's how you know. He had to leave behind a reckless life. Like, he was reckless in the first 2 weeks of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like Cats imagine hadn't even where really he's
got
at
cabin fever yet. Cats yeah, ain't like, even got cabin fever yet.
He's not even jammed up yet. But that's not surprising. Those two feel like that feels like a thing. But however, how did that play out? Because I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast and the Heat and the Lakers were staying in the same hotel.
That's what I'm saying. They were all in the same hotel. So she's right. Going down to and then think about it, both the new girlfriends and kind of one of them is the old girlfriend are all in the same spot getting breakfast in the morning.
Yeah, see, that's just that's next level. But you know what? The NBA filed for that. They shouldn't have. You should have only been able to bring folks in if you got papers to them. You shouldn't just be bringing in boppers. You shouldn't be able to bring boppers in. That should the bubble should have been a no bopper zone. Yes. A bopper free zone. I want a bopper free bubble going forward.
The things that I want a book on the things that we didn't know about that was going on in the bubble, like. So maybe they got into it or something we just don't know about because the bubble is a self-contained unit.
Yeah.
Ain't none of that stuff leaking out.
Yeah, well, it's coming out now that people have left the bubble in full.
Right, but think about the writers that are there and the people that are there. It's like being a writer back in the 50s, 60s. You don't want to mess up
you
ain't going to be like Tyler Hero's girlfriend was fighting with Kuzma's girlfriend in the lobby.
It was crazy stuff happening in that bubble. I know the stories will come. The bubble just freshly closed, so the
somebody needs to write a book on just the inside of the bubble. I don't want
it'll happen. That will definitely happen. I promise that will happen. What we got next? What's up?
Dan Mullins, Nick Saban, and SEC fire sale on NFL season.
All right. So, Dan Mullins, the coach of the Florida Gators, said he wants 90,000 people in the stands. He said so the Florida Gators went down to Texas A&M and took an L, and they said that it was an advantage because Texas A&M had fans. And he says, I want 90,000 people in the stands. The governor said we
only had like 20,000-30,000. It wasn't.
The governor said we can be full capacity. I want our fans want to support us. They need to be here. And then the next day after, so here's the steps. The next day, Nick Saban got COVID. I'm sorry, the same day that the day after Dan Mullins said that. Dan Mullins said that on Sunday. Mm-hmm. On Monday, Mizzou and Vanderbilt canceled their game this weekend because Vanderbilt don't have enough people to field a team because of COVID. And then the next day, Nick Saban comes up. He's got COVID. And then there was a report this morning saying up to potentially 10 players on Alabama could have it, and this weekend's Alabama-Georgia game could be in danger.
And so is Sarkisian coaching then?
I don't know who's coaching. It might not take very much coaching. If you haven't seen that Alabama offense this year, I might be able to coach that team.
And don't be surprised if there's a telelink or something that Saban is sitting there literally still coaching.
Saban got like that crib. Saban's going to have that TV from elementary school that they rolled down the hallway. It's just going to be his head in that joint.
Or the fishbowl, like on a Futurama, the dude with the fishbowl.
Right, the dude with the fishbowl. He might be like Krang. He might have a body and just his head in there. It might be like when they opened up that dude chest in RoboCop 2, and that little head was in there, and they had to keep giving it that power. Yeah, it could be anything, but it just shows. I knew the entire time that the SEC would be the conference that ran out the gates because We got to have what we got to have. And everything has gotten smashed for them. LSU lost to Mizzou. LSU had given up, had lost hella people for the draft that was like, we just ain't messing with it. We're not dealing with it. And the whole thing is turned upside down. Meanwhile, the Big Ten is taking their time. Pac-10 is taking their time. They're coming back, trying to figure it out. But I feel like this predictably reckless football-first mentality of the Southern United States has led to this. And here we are.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to finish this season in college football?
Or is I don't even know how we're finishing a semester of school, let alone that. No bubbles, no none of that. I think
that's going to end of the year. It's going to be like the old AP USA Today polls where somebody's number one because you voted on it.
They're going to be playing in April. Like it's going to be crazy.
MAC and all them also said they playing in the spring. Like the MAC and Mountain West claim they're playing in the spring.
Yep. That's why like the non-power, the only teams playing early are Power Five, and you know why? That money.
Money.
That's the only thing
TV
driving
contracts.
So we got a conspiracy here too, man. I think we saw between the lines. What we got next? It's not quite a conspiracy brother moment, but all
XFL
the same.
Last Boy Scout conspiracy.
All right, man. So hear me out on this. Ride with me.
I'm interested.
I know you're more disposed to conspiracies than I.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally figured out why The Rock stepped up and bought the XFL.
Okay.
The opportunity was there. He could buy a whole league for like $15 million. That's kind of like me buying like two pairs of Jordans with one check. Like, it's kind of like, it ain't hurting me, but I definitely know that I spent money on like three pairs of Jordans on like StockX, one check. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, all right, it's kind of like, ah, man, it's cool. I mean, I can afford it. I'm straight.
It's whatever.
I might as well do it. I definitely know I did it, but that's what $15 million is to The Rock. I mean, he's at like 22 a movie or something like that.
To me, that's a bargain amount.
It is. It's a bargain, but here's the reason why. Here's the conspiracy where it comes in at. Mm-hmm. I feel like The Rock bought the XFL so that he can feature it in movies and make a reboot of The Last Boy Scout starring him and Jason Statham.
Okay, so Jason Statham's playing Bruce Willis, and he's playing Damon Wayans' role.
No, Jason Statham's playing Damon Wayans. Yes, Jason Statham is Bruce Willis.
But it'd be a great flip though if they did flip it the opposite way.
But all they're gonna do but every XFL game you go to after the reboot in 2022 is gonna be another Rock movie that's getting shot. Because The Rock got a deal with Netflix right now where he's got a movie coming out. So who knows what's next? The Rock is just gonna be shooting movies throughout the XFL season.
I know he's mad that Ballers stopped.
Well, he's just living it out. That's it. He's just living ballers.
No, but I'm saying, but he could have just moved and said, now his character's buying the XFL and really living in real life, but on the TV show.
And just keep it going. So, like, yeah, that's my conspiracy. I think The Rock bought the XFL to shoot movies throughout it. And Jason Statham is going to be emerging soon as the new commissioner or something of it.
That'd be hilarious. I mean, it's him and his ex-wife, too. Think about that. He's doing business with his ex-wife like that.
You need to holler at the guys from the We Coming For You cast about the Rock conspiracy, too, about his ex-wife. It's not my conspiracy. I'm not giving it.
Oh, okay. I'm jumping in the text group now.
Yeah, you need to holler at them because there's a conspiracy in play.
Yo, they got all the shout out to the We Coming For You podcast. They podcast has they got conspiracy theories I didn't even know was even possible of the realm of possibility. But then you Google them, like just to follow, like not saying I don't believe them, brothers. You just want to see, like, is this for real? And then you Google it, and it's 50 pages on whatever they just talked about.
Right. Yeah, it's real. It's real. It's a real thing. What we got next?
Next up, we have. Conor McGregor is back.
Conor McGregor's fighting. Conor McGregor's fighting. That's right.
Yeah, so, he's like the dad that only picks you up once in the summer.
So all right. Once again, hear me out. Conor McGregor has come back to do so many things. He done been out here selling whiskey. He was fighting Manny Pacquiao in the desert, and now he's coming back in January to the UFC to fight Dustin Poirier.
Is any of these fights really gonna happen?
I'm confused. But again, he's the dad who keeps saying he's going to pick you up every weekend, but then he don't ever show up. But then he show up with a Christmas gift and then he out again. So the last Christmas gift he brought was for your birthday. It wasn't even a Christmas gift. It was a birthday when he fought Cowboy Cerrone.
Early.
And then he was supposed to fight Khabib for months and then all this stuff. And it didn't happen. And now he's back saying he quit. Oh, he retired. I'm sorry. He retired. Now he's coming back. He's doing all this. Conor McGregor is that dad, man, that keep on promising you, and he got you looking through the window. You got your shoes on, but your mama know he ain't coming for real, but she don't want to let you down, so she just let him not showing up let you down.
Because he's like, I'm not going to put myself in that position.
And then she take you to get some McDonald's.
Yeah, but if he shows up, it's all good. You know, you didn't down him or anything either, though, but you just let that ship kind of go down on his own.
Right. That's Conor McGregor.
Because the Manny Pacquiao thing was weird, too. Like,
it was super weird.
Like, like Manny Pacquiao saying it. I was like, why would Manny Pacquiao even do that?
Manny Pacquiao is here for the bread, too. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
The same way that the same way.
Tax issues, right? Wasn't he having some tax issues or something?
He was like a governor. I don't know how. I thought he was like the.
No, I was talking about with the U.S.
Oh, probably. I don't know. Like Ronaldo's going to come into court even right when he get done with the COVID.
Yeah. I mean, didn't they drop them charges on Ronaldo?
Nah, man, they just brought him back up again. They say he probably gonna have to come
over. They dropped them, though, like 6 months ago.
They back. I should have put that in sports ratchetry, but it's hard for me to say that rape is ratchetry.
And he got COVID all of a sudden, too, though. Real, real convenient. He got COVID now.
Just like that other cat got COVID all of a sudden. But Ronaldo will be cured, too. What else? We got a couple things left. What else we got?
We got one more, man. In the ratchet, hold up, pull it up now. Ooh, hold up. All right, we have. We got two more. Ocho Cinco wants a job too at HBCU.
I'm gonna give this to you. You brought this one to me. I'm gonna throw this back to you.
I don't understand Ocho's. Okay, number one, does Ocho Cinco have a degree?
He went to Oregon State.
Come on now. That's a real valid question. Did he graduate from Oregon State?
I don't know.
If you had to just not Googling it just off basis, do you think Ocho Cinco graduated from college?
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah, because he's random as hell like that. Like, yeah, I'm going to say
what?
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, you know what? But I believe he wants to coach, but at least Deion even went down and coached high school ball for a long time. And got his – I feel like he just be talking too. I feel like that as well. He just be talking.
I don't know. I think that for the people that just be talking, I feel like Ocho Cinco is like the chapter president though. Because like Ocho Cinco hella random. Like he was running sprints against Tyreek Hill a couple months ago. Like he just that guy.
Oh, I guess he took night classes during a couple of seasons to graduate.
See? Ocho Cinco, baby. He got all you need.
Shout out to Ocho Cinco, Oregon State, or Oregon State.
Maybe he could be like the coach of like LU or something. That'd be cool.
He ain't going to do that, man. LU going to pay him like $20,000 a year, man.
Go out to Lincoln. Go out to Jeff City.
They'll be paying him like $20,000. And the only thing that's gangster looking at now, if you follow Deion's Instagram, he's upgraded their facilities on his own. Like, I just need these amenities, like, for myself.
This is the only way I'm willing to live. So
it reminded me how, like, the Baron said with Jordan, like, how he upgraded the buses and everything, because that's the way he lives, so everybody got to live like that.
Jared Dudley said that LeBron James had a wine cellar in his hotel room in the bubble.
What?
Yeah, he said he just had that much wine brought in. And what we say the whole time, when Rondo put that room out there with them double beds, I said, LeBron ain't sleeping in no double beds room. They said he had a hyperbaric chamber and a wine cellar in his hotel room.
But did you also hear that they had to get a warehouse just for Amazon packages coming to people?
Yeah.
And think about it. It's cats sitting there like, man, I'm laying low on my packages for real. I'm trying to be nice about it.
Oh, man, like them, you got a bunch of millionaires who can't go nowhere.
And just sitting on Amazon.
Yeah, just like, all right, I'm just going to buy, like, what was it? One of them bought, like, a video game, like, from the one arcade one-up thing. He bought, like, three video games and just had them delivered.
The arcade machine?
Yes.
So, hold on. Who was that? Who was that?
I saw it early on.
Was it somebody surprising, or was it somebody like a J.R. Smith?
Nobody surprises me. They're millionaires. I mean, yeah. they're in their early 30s, late 20s, like, early 20s for some of them. Like, nothing surprises me with that.
If that's probably Steve the light. Kerr, if it was what? Steve Kerr, would it surprise you?
That's the no. Well, Steve Kerr shouldn't have been there. But
that's what I'm saying. No, that's true. He was.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I nothing would surprise me. Again, Tales from the Bubble. Tales from the Bubble. It's gonna be.
Oh man, it's gonna be amazing. I mean, I wonder how many pack things they just left.
Probably just like I'm ready to go.
Like I mean, think about how much. I mean, think about the come up.
What they did probably was just like, oh yeah, I guarantee you there was come ups. Like I mean, anytime somebody like Russell Westbrook was leaving like $8,000 tips, them cats are just happy to go. But you know what I'm saying? Like they
like,
probably
like if you bought those two video game machines, are you reshipping those or are you just leaving them?
The tip game probably was strong though, like across the board. Waiting on like NBA cats probably you know struck up some relationships with them like the room service tips they probably was fired the restaurant that they built for them
and it's probably the same dude coming up there you know John running up there to your room like hey man but boy can you grab some extra breadsticks for me too
but dude said it was like living kind of slum at first they said the cats was like eating like protein bars for breakfast and lunch until they got the chefs and stuff set up
oh because the chefs had to go through their own quarantine before they could even come through
right so they said they was living kind of slum the first like the, when them little warm-up games was going on
can you
imagine making $8 million a year and having to eat protein bars for lunch like that's
and
all
you can't
got?
Even you can't even get pizza delivered or nothing
Mm-mm. Wasn't there like a lot of guys just said it was like that freshman year of college, but like the cats that didn't go to college was like, what is this? Like,
right. I never experienced this. LeBron is like I'll never experience this. How many people are hanging out LeBron's room every night you think, or he was on a dolo?
No, they said LeBron's superman of the people. Like they said after the games they said that they'd drink wine and smoke cigars and shit, chill out.
In the room, that's how gangster it is. You smoking cigars in the room.
Can't go nowhere, might as well. All right, man. We got one left, man.
Le'Veon Bell, man, is now cut. This is a tragic story.
We've been talking about this for 2 years at this point. I don't know. I guess Le'Veon is kind of the winner here. He did make $28 million for 18 games as a Jet, but he missed the whole season. Now, all right, so now here's the thing. He could end up being the big winner here because they said – that the Chiefs are one of the teams he's interviewing with.
No, so he could go to a champion.
Bread and pocket. So I think that the teams I saw were the Chiefs, the Dolphins, and I can't remember. There was a third team too.
You going from hell to hell?
But I mean, you're living in Miami at least. I mean, you know, you might as well do what you want to.
And the state is open. Do you want to really live in Miami at this point?
I personally, you know how I feel about Florida. You know,
every day, Matt is already thinking about the coronavirus, y'all.
I've only had it twice this week so far. Thank you very much.
Y'all should see his posts in our like text groups and stuff and like online. Follow him on Facebook. He's always got a scare.
Yeah, so Le'Veon trains in Miami in the offseason. They say they could be offering him a 2-year contract, and that the Bills are looking at him as well. So you got a chance to stay in upstate New York, leave New York to go to upstate New York, go to play with the Pat Mahomes, or go live in Miami. Whichever one it is, it's not staying in upstate New York for me. Ain't no damn way.
Yeah, he don't need to. Yeah, he don't need.
And none of the rehab teams need him, like the Cowboys, the Bengals, or the Raiders. The rehab trio, they don't need him.
And so is Dallas the part of the rehab now?
They always have been.
Oh, okay.
They always have been. Okay. Yeah.
Because you had the next to the Bengals, I was like, damn, are they that far down?
Yeah, in my opinion, the redemption trio has always been those three teams. Just look, always look the roster and see who's on them, and then just remember how far back you remember them having that they last skirmish. There's always going to be some guaranteed skirmishes on all of those teams.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I guess Le'Veon Bell, if Kansas City, I guess, I mean, he's going to be the backup, right? He's the backup.
Yeah, he'd probably be
third down back.
They'd probably be mixing it up. It's hard to have Le'Veon if he's healthy. You know, Andy Reid will find a way. You know, don't worry about that. Andy Reid will find a way. All right, man. Well, hey, brother, I appreciate you making time.
Oh, man, dude, it's all good, man. Thank you for having me on again, man.
We got the OG scenario coming shortly. We got a lot to talk. We have a lot. We got a lot to talk about.
We got like 20 emails too. We might have to do a whole mailbag episode.
Maybe that's what we do. Let's do a mailbag episode. We can do that anytime. Let's do a mailbag episode. And yeah, we'll have a mail. You know what? We have a mailbag episode on Monday. We'll have that dropping. Hey, always remember to stay plugged into the whole SOLC network, man.
Yeah, we got all kind of stuff dropping, man. Everybody been working, man. I've been appreciating everybody working on their own.
We got the commentary out there, man. We got the We Coming For You podcast. Y'all just dropped a couple 90s, of new
90s ones. R&B, a 90s R&B show.
Yeah.
We just dropped Just Kicking the Soccer podcast. I used Mary J. Blige Not Gonna Cry for my Manchester United soccer team. And I'm not gonna cry no more on this team. And I got it past YouTube by just keeping on pausing it.
There you go. And yeah, make it be that stutter and cry. Hey, yep. And we got a brand new endeavor that's coming for election season, man.
Yeah.
Politics as usual.
Question mark.
With a question mark, because ain't nothing usual like it is right now.
Not at all.
We're gonna have a lot of different people coming on that to talk about, you know, for St. Louis local politics, but also talking about national politics, how local politics impact, you know, the big picture for everything. So, you know, wherever your locality is, so everybody's, it's gonna be something for everybody that's on that one. That's coming real soon. That's gonna be a limited engagement podcast to get us ready for the next
month.
Like
the Watchmen. Like the white noise. Yeah,
exactly. And for what's going to be carrying on the other side of that too, man. So shout out to everybody that's going to help that happen. But thanks for checking out the Scenario Sports. We back next week. New vibe, same place, man. Holler at you soon.